This is Matt Davis, and you're listening to Finding Etheridge on Cultural Manifesto. Finding Etheridge explores the people and places connected to the Pulitzer Prize-nominated poet, Etheridge Knight. Etheridge Knight was born in Mississippi in 1931. He began writing in the 1960s while serving time at the Indiana State Prison. Or, as Etheridge wrote in his famous 1968 book, Poems from Prison, "I died in Korea from a shrapnel wound and narcotics resurrected me. I died in 1960 from a prison sentence and poetry brought me back to life." Etheridge Knight died in Indianapolis, Indiana in March 1991, but his legacy grows ever stronger with each passing year.
The idea of ancestry. I am all of them, they are all of me. I know their style, they know mine. I was beginning to forget who I was.
My guest this week is Hanako Gavia. She's the assistant director of Butler University's Center for Citizenship and Community. An Indianapolis resident since childhood, Ms. Gavia is the great-niece of Etheridge Knight Jr. She is very close to her family, including Etheridge Knight's sisters, Clynice Bennett and Janice Knight. Ms. Gavia is a graduate of Indiana University Bloomington, majoring in international studies with a thematic concentration in culture and arts, and minors in both Japanese and Spanish, and has recently finished her Master's of Education for Effective Teaching and Leadership at Butler University. Hanako, so great to have you here as our second guest on Finding Etheridge.
Yes, thank you for having me.
So let's just start off about you. I know we're going to talk a bunch about Etheridge and his legacy and how you fit into all that, but first let's just start with you. I mean, you're an incredible person too, and again, thanks for being here with us. So tell us a little bit about yourself and your background.
Yeah. So my name is Hanako Gavia. My full name is Hanako Ayala Esperanza Gavia. I was born in Munster, Indiana, actually on Halloween. So my sister makes fun of me for being a demon baby. Both my parents have grown up in Indianapolis. They actually met at Shortridge High School. My mom was a cheerleader. My dad was a football player. And they met because my dad was actually my mom's geometry tutor. So both my parents are mixed race. So my dad is half black and half Mexican. My mom is half Japanese and half black. So we grew up in a pretty culturally diverse household, and family has always been number one, and as well as education in my family.
Awesome. Can you talk a little bit more about your place in the family? I mean, obviously, family is really important to you. And like, describe how you are seen as a family member. I mean, you're young, but you seem to be really responsible and mature and kind of take on different elements of like supporting your family. And like, so describe like how your family sees you.
Yeah. So like in my whole family, even my extended family, I would say I am definitely a princess in my family.
I thought you were a demon baby, though.
No, I'm a demon baby princess.
Okay.
But, like, not in the princess fact that I got everything I wanted.
Right,
I still
okay.
have to, like, do the same princess stuff. Like, I have to actually, like, do, like, political things, like, delegate things and help the people in my family out.
There we go.
So it's not even just, like, the wonderful perks of being the princess that you get all the fun stuff. It's like, no, you actually have to do work.
Right. You're, like, the ambassador or, like, the diplomat.
Yes.
Okay, gotcha.
So for my dad's family, he is the oldest son. So a lot of people come to him for problems, and because we are his children, we also have to help out. So if they have anything about, Hanako, can you scan this picture? Can you find this information online? They all go to me instead of, like, to some of my older cousins they go to, but also they ask a lot of our family and me and my sister in general. And then I'm one of the only ones that's, of my sisters, I'm the one that's most active in town, so they ask a lot of me. And on my mom's side, too, I'm one of the only grandkids that's in town. So they also kind of ask a lot of me. And I'm around and in academia, so they'll ask me to look up things. And I'm always, like, the tech person, so everyone asks me to do the technical things. I'm the youngest in my immediate family, so that's also where some of the princess stuff comes in. But I am probably seen as the most responsible of my sisters. So they ask a lot of me.
No, I hear that. I also heard you say, like, kind of in town, like in Indianapolis. Do you Do you have a lot of family outside of Indianapolis? Is a majority of your family, kind of your immediate family and stuff, are they here or?
Yeah, so my sister, my immediate sister that's closest to my age, she's in New York City. So she's always been the art one. So she's the one that does theater. She writes stories, does poetry. She used to be in speech team in high school. So she did all of those kinds of things. So she was the artistic one, and then I was the manager. So between the two of us, we kind of had to fulfill all those roles. And then for my mom's side of the family, there's a lot of them that are out of town, like her siblings. Two of her siblings live out of town. And then we still have our family that's in Corinth, Mississippi, or we have some family that's in Pennsylvania. So they're kind of just all around the United States.
Do you still have family in Kentucky? I know that Etheridge came to Indianapolis from Paducah.
I think so, but most of them are kind of like our extended family are kind of all over the place. So I think there might be a few in Paducah, Kentucky. We did go back there for a family reunion. Not family reunion. We went there for a high school reunion, my grandfather's high school reunion when I was little. And I think that was like the first out-of-town overnight trip that I didn't stay with my family. We stayed in a hotel was when we went to Paducah, Kentucky.
Well, awesome. Yeah, how has the arts played in your family outside of Etheridge? Like, are more people outside of Etheridge involved in the arts and different creative things? Or has that been more of a part of his legacy in your family?
A lot of people have been creative in different ways. I think maybe not really seeking out that kind of international or national fame. My sister has kind of followed along those lines of moving to New York City. She does playwriting and acting, working on trying to get published. My mother, she wanted to be an opera singer when she was younger. So her uncle, so Etheridge, went and helped her connect to people. He really encouraged her about following those dreams. My other uncle, he also was a jazz musician for a while. So Etheridge also encouraged him on that. There was also my great aunt, Eunice Bowens. So she continued on with the Etheridge Night legacy, with the Etheridge Night Festival.
Absolutely. Shout out to Miss Ife, by the way.
Yes. So she was wonderful. I know her as Aunt Dale. So I might mess up and call people by their nicknames in the
family. Oh, that's what this is for. That's
okay. So Aunt Dale, she really kind of kept his legacy alive here in Indianapolis. But I think all of us kind of have hidden talents of that. But my sister, Miyako, she's the one that's actually continued to pursue that as a career versus just kind of as a hobby.
Speaking of continuing the legacy of his work, I mean, can you describe your role as a representative of Etheridge's work? Like, has that been since you've become older and moved into adulthood, or has that been an element of how you grew up? Like, how has that evolved?
I always knew about him. Like, everyone told me that my uncle was a famous poet, but we didn't really read any of his poems. The first memory I have of really going to the Etheridge Night Festival, I was maybe 2 or 3 years old, and they wanted all of his, like the little kids, to write poems in honor of Etheridge. And I told my mom I didn't really know a lot of words. And so she was like, well, poems don't have to rhyme. You can just say whatever. So I rambled on to her about a butterfly, and she wrote it down. And it got published in some kind of book to my uncle. And people thought it was pretty good, but it was really just a child rambling. And then after that, I kind of didn't really, I told people that I was related to him, but a lot of people I knew didn't know who Etheridge Knight was. So I didn't really start taking on stuff about his legacy until I started working at Butler and kind of getting older. Because also, that was Aunt Dale's thing. So she was the arbiter of that festival. She was really the one that was in charge of keeping the legacy alive with the festival. So we would go and support her, but it's nothing I really had to do until I was older and she had passed on already.
When did that start? Like, around what age do you feel like that started?
It really didn't start until, it was 2019 when it started. Mm-hmm. So that's when I started taking over things about the festival. After Aunt Dale passed away, I think it was really hard for us to kind of get back into things. And it was her project and her baby, and none of us really wanted to take it on. And and try to live up to that. But finding myself at Butler and finding the connection that Butler had to Etheridge Knight and feeling more comfortable, too, to have different parts of my life to coalesce led me to be more comfortable taking on that. And so once I told my family that, hey, a bunch of people at Butler want to do this project of getting Etheridge Knight's name more into the community, they elected me as the family representative of that.
So you are the ambassador officially now.
Yeah, at least according to my great aunts, I am the ambassador.
You've been deputized.
Like, yes.
It's official. It's
yes,
official.
I was voluntold.
Exactly, yeah. If the elders in your family are like making you do it, it's a wrap.
Yeah.
It's a wrap. So speaking of that, can you describe, similar to yourself, right, but can you describe Etheridge's place in your family? So as I've kind of been putting together this stage play and getting to know your family, talking with you, others, I hardly hear the name Etheridge at all, right? He's referred to as Junior. Like, everybody in your family that I talk to, everyone's like, well, you know, Junior this and Uncle Junior that. And I'm like, and then sometimes I have to stop and be like, okay, that's Etheridge. I have to, like, kind of key in sometimes. And so obviously, it's a big part of his work, too. He talks about his family a lot. And then, obviously, there's the obvious pieces, like ideas of ancestry, things like that. But it's in a little bit of all of his work. And so how does he fit into his own family? Like, how do you all see him?
Yeah. He was always that figure in your family. Like, you have, like, the fun uncle. So he was the fun uncle. He was the trickster uncle. So my other uncle, who's also called Junior in the family, he's kind of embodied that presence of him, too. And so he would also be, like, the other representative for Etheridge
Knight.
So this
is Floyd. This is Little Junior.
Yes, Little
okay,
Junior.
Okay, see, I'm catching up.
So Junior, I think also what the thing is because, of course, the reason why he's called Junior is because my great-grandfather was named Etheridge, though no one called him Etheridge. They called him Bushy. So almost everyone in my family on my mom's side has nicknames, to the point where I will go and see them out in public and I will just call them their nicknames. I will get, when I was younger, I would get Facebook requests from people. And I was like, I don't know who this person is because I have never seen their name before. I always called them like my cousin Winky. I was like, I always called him Winky. I didn't know his name was Carrie.
Shouts out to your uncle Tony, Mr. Tony. I've been knowing Mr. Tony for years. And I know him by about three different names. Charles, Tony, and there's another name I know him by too. So that checks.
Yeah. So, yeah, no one goes by their actual names except me and my sister and my cousin. And the three of us were like, why don't we get nicknames? And they're just like, well, your names are just so beautiful that we don't need to have nicknames, so you should be honored, was the reply we got when we asked why we didn't have nicknames and everyone else did. But Uncle Junior, he was the trickster uncle. He was the fun uncle. He was the one that really, when he liked to mess with my grandfather. My grandfather was the second oldest son. He was the responsible one. He was the serious one. And so that was his little brother that his little brother liked to pick on his older brother. He liked to mess with him about things. And that's where my uncles say, too, where they got their skills of picking on my grandfather was from their uncle, Junior.
So obviously, Etheridge Knight was very raw and vulnerable about not only his triumphs, his perspective, his vantage point as an artist and writer, but then also his struggles, too. In his work, he's very vulnerable about that. How has your family kind of dealt with that aspect of his legacy in regards to continuing to show a full picture of who he is?
Yeah, so it was something that was always acknowledged. Like, I knew he went to jail. My mom talked about visiting him in jail, but it was never seen as he was a bad person. It was something that he made mistakes. So really, for our family, I know him more as a family member, as my uncle, as the fun uncle, as the one that encouraged his sisters, that his sisters loved deeply, that my grandfather loved deeply, but was always annoyed by the uncle that was always encouraging his nieces and nephews to follow their dreams. Despite if it wasn't the safest route, then really as like the other things were kind of asides, like, oh yeah, he wrote poetry and he went to jail and he had a drug problem. Those were kind of asides to his personality. But the main focus was that he was a family member. He was the uncle.
That's what I've always taken away from my interactions with your family, too. And I appreciate you sharing that. I think that that's really profound in the way that your family has kind of situated that as a reality, but not the totality of who he is. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that can be hard, especially as someone's reaching fame. And it seems like he never really got too separate from you all. And that's really powerful.
Yeah. He was always around, so you could go to him for anything. So that's one reason why I think we're all very invested in this legacy of his and making sure people don't just see him as the druggie or the ex-con or the famous poet, but as a person that my great aunt used to say that he never knew a stranger and that he could talk to white people as easily as he could talk to black people, which for her was amazing at the time. Because she's like, we don't usually interact with black people and white people don't necessarily interact all that much. When she went to school, they still had segregated schooling. So the idea that he could talk to anybody and he never knew a stranger was the central point of who he was and the community that he was able to bring together. And then again, first and foremost, he was my uncle. He's a family member. When I see videos of him, when I read his poems, when I see pictures of him, I see my grandfather, I see my Aunt Dale, I see my Aunt Niecy, I see Aunt Janice, I see everybody in him.
I've heard you mention your Uncle Etheridge as a trickster, and I've heard a few people mention him as a trickster, and it always kind of makes me smile. And a lot of his pieces, the way he phrases things, he almost has like a dry grin behind his writer's voice, his writing voice. So when you read it, there's almost a dry grin in his voice. So he almost feels like a trickster on the page, too. What is your favorite Uncle Junior story? I'm sure there's like a ton of them.
Yeah, I think one of my favorites is the story about how he used to start fights just so my grandfather would fight for him to defend him. So they would be walking in back in, I think in Corinth or Paducah, they'd walk to school and he'd start a fight with some random boys so that my grandfather would have to go and fight and defend him. And so then of course my grandfather would get in trouble because he was fighting with other people rather than my uncle getting in trouble for starting the fight in the first place. But he had to defend his little brother. So I think that dynamic just kind of shows who he was as a person. That he's like, no, I want my brother to fight for me. And just to get my brother's attention, I'm going to start this fight.
So he kind of kept messing with his brother as they grew up, right? Did that like kind of continue?
Yes. That was just their relationship growing up from what I've heard. So unfortunately, he had passed away before I was born. Actually, I was already born, but I don't have recollection of meeting him. I was probably about 3 months when he passed away. But I've heard stories about him my whole life. So that was one of the stories I always thought was funny. It was just like that shows you what his relationship with his brother was, that he purposely started fights so his brother could fight them for him rather than doing it for himself.
So you've definitely kind of just grown into being the representative of his legacy in your family. And so can you talk about some of this more formal work that you're doing at Butler in regards to his archive and other things that you're doing with the university?
Yeah, so it started out with a grant from the Council of Independent Colleges back in 2019, so about the time I kind of started taking things over. So that's when I found out more about what was actually in the Butler University archive, which is basically everything that was in his house when he passed away. Besides some of the stuff that Miss Elizabeth took with her to honor his memory and then her own things that she took from the house. So I was very curious about what was in the archive, and Butler got a grant so we could kind of go in the archive, see what was in there, and figure out how we could put this out to the public. And because of my relationship with my uncle and my family, And we really wanted to make sure the family was involved and that my aunts had a say and the rest of my family had a say in what was going on in the archive and what we were going to bring out to the public. I kind of became the point person for that project. And though before we even applied for the grant, talking about the possibilities of it, we had decided that we were going to do it regardless of the money or not anyway. And so since then, it's just kind of kept going. And we've gotten a committee together of people that are very much interested in keeping my uncle's legacy alive. We've been working with the Center for Black Literature and Culture, Miss Nichelle Hayes. She's been really great about helping us with everything.
Shouts out to Nichelle Hayes, by the way. Give her that job.
I know. But
stop playing.
I know. So Miss Nichelle Hayes has been a really big part, even the faculty at Butler. I didn't realize how big my uncle's legacy was really until I started working on this project and how these random faculty members really loved my uncle and told me how wonderful and inspiring his work was. So I've been working with the Indy Arts Council to get a mural of him up as part of their Legends Mural Project, trying to keep the feeling and idea of the Etheridge Night Festival alive through birthday events for him and other events for him in the city, and just talking to people about how we can really keep the ethos of who he was alive, not only through his poetry and that and how strong his poetry was to reach other people, but just that he was able to bring different communities together and celebrate the arts and who you were as a person through the written word.
Thank you. Yeah, that's such important work. And so many like prolific artists don't really have like that follow through piece after they've transitioned. And it's really great that not only your family is doing that and you're stepping up, but that the institutions are really recognizing the value in that, too. That's amazing. Speaking of that, there's a mural project upon us, and that's in the works and it's happening soon. And can you talk a little bit about the mural and how that will be a part of cementing his legacy in our city's history?
Yes. So the mural project is we're trying to get a mural of him downtown at a spot where he would frequent. It was nice enough that the person that owns that spot has donated the spot as a place for the mural to be. And it's in a pretty central location downtown. But yeah, it will be on the side of the Chatterbox, so it will be right next to Miss Mari Evans' mural as well. And then also you can see from that angle Kurt Vonnegut's mural, so you have those three different writers.
Wow.
In that like, little triangle. I think that puts him on a level that not everyone knows that he's on that level. And then we've been very conscious about the design and who we're picking for this, what we want his legacy to be, and really getting our family's input. So I didn't just ask my immediate family or his two sisters, Aunt Janice or Aunt Niecy, about what they wanted, but all of my family. Which one was your favorite? Why is that your favorite? What do you want everyone else to know about our family, our legacy, and about Junior as a person? So how do we want him to be displayed in the city?
So we got one of your favorite stories about your Uncle Junior. What's one of your favorite recordings? You're always dealing with his archive and dealing with his past works. What's one of your favorite recordings?
Well, my mom said about my Uncle Junior was that his poems weren't actually meant to be read. They're meant to be listened to. And so I think probably because of her and because of the influence of my other families, one of my favorite things to see is him reading Elu and the Talking Drum. And just thinking about how his voice carried, hearing him speak, making me think of my aunties and my uncle, my grandfather. And feeling that cadence really makes me feel like I knew him and that he was there. By one of the movies we found while we were doing this, like kind of looking for Etheridge, trying to find different archival pieces, was a videotape of him reading to a high school. And so seeing how he was interacting with the high schoolers and what he wanted them to know and how enthusiastic he was of sharing his work. That was also really exciting. And also just the fashion of 1980s.
That, I was about to say, that's that one where he had that yellow sweater on. It was fly.
Yeah, he had the yellow sweater, and then you see like all those kids too. And I was just like, are those really children?
Right, yeah.
And I was like, that this looks like it's right out of like a 1980s like movie. So that was fun to see.
Elu, the talking drum. The deadness was threatening us, 15 Nigerians and one Mississippi nigger. It hung heavily like stones around our necks, pulling us down to the ground, black arms and legs outflung on the wide green lawn of the big White House. The deadness was threatening us. The day was dying with the sun. The stillness, unlike the sweet silence after lovemaking or the pulsating quietness of a summer night, the stillness was skinny and brittle and wrinkled by the precise people sitting on the wide white porch of the big White House. The darkness was threatening us, menacing. We twisted, turned, shifted positions, picked our nose, stared at our bare toes, hissed air through our teeth. Then Tunji, green robes flowing as he rose, stepped on Elu, the talking drum, and began. Kadoom, kadoom, doom, kadoom, kadoom, doom, doom, kadoom, kadoom, doom, kadoom, kadoom, doom, doom, kadoom, kadoom, doom, kadoom, kadoom, doom, doom, kadoom, kadoom, doom, kadoom, kadoom, doom, doom. The heart beat, the heart beat. Slow, the heart beats slowly, the heart beats, the blood flows slowly, the blood flows, the blood flows, the blood flows slow. Kadoom, kadoom, doom, kadoom, kadoom, doom, doom. And the day opens to the sound. Kadoom, kadoom, doom, kadoom, kadoom, doom, doom. And our feet move to the sound of life. Kadoom, kadoom, doom, kadoom, kadoom, doom, doom. And we rode the rhythms as one from Nigeria to Mississippi and back. Kadoom, kadoom, doom, kadoom, kadoom, doom, doom.
There's something I'm trying to ask all of the guests that come on the show. Again, thank you for being here. What's something that you'd like to share about Etheridge Knight that people don't know or don't usually understand?
I think for me, a lot of it is that what you see in Etheridge is something that you'll see in like the Knight family and just the Black community too in Indianapolis. So as that was something, too, as we were going through the archives, the students that were working on that, they were amazed, like, oh, he got into a car accident and all these people were trying to raise money before GoFundMe was a thing. And I was like, yeah, of course, that's what you did. Or just like how many people that were there and came out for him and how normal I felt that was. So my uncle was an extraordinary person. He was a wonderful person. There was no one like him, but certain things about him, like his kindness, his openness, they also are in the embodiment of my family. So that is something that, and the Indianapolis community in general. So I want people to see that when they think of Etheridge and not only him as a singular solitary person. And I think the other thing I think about is sometimes we get really caught up on like public figures having to be perfect and historical figures having to be perfect. And you have this man that is out here being super problematic and just owning it. And I love that. that he's like, I did drugs, I was in jail, I'm a womanizer, I've done a bunch of bad things, and he is still a great person. So recognizing that you don't have to be absolutely perfect to also be a great person and contribute things.
Wow, that was so powerful. What a note to end on. Hanako, thank you so much for coming here. It's an honor to have you here individually and then also to have you represent your family so powerfully. Thank you so much for your time.
Yes, thank you for having me.
My guest this week has been Hanako Gavia, Assistant Director of Butler University's Center of Citizenship and Community and great niece of writer Etheridge Knight. Stay tuned to Cultural Manifesto for future editions of Finding Etheridge. And check out the Finding Etheridge podcast on Spotify, iTunes, or wherever you listen to podcasts. If you have stories, memories, or photos related to Etheridge Knight, contact us at findingetheridge@gmail.com. We might include you in an upcoming episode of Finding Etheridge or in the upcoming stage play documenting the life of Etheridge Knight. Finding Etheridge is produced by Kyle Long and hosted and co-produced by me, Matt Davis.